Let's go back in time to 1932 as Converse brings you historic footage of the legendary original Celtics with whom all great professional teams are compared.
We have now taken over your radio.
Richie Guerin is about to show you the most important step in getting past a man. It's the first one.
And Oscar will inbound it. The men in green, the Milwaukee Bucks, that's Al Cinder against Bellamy.
Person has Jordan. Allen shakes free. Gets two!
Gilmore.
Oh! Stop! Oh!
Brother. Leave Toledo, Artis. You get 21.
4:28 to go in the first quarter for the Cal Palace. Here's Barry.
Jordan. Open. Chicago with the lead.
Hello, and welcome back to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast at thepodiumgame.com. I am Jason Mann, and with me as always is Rich Kraich. Rich, great to be back with you.
Yes, absolutely good. I'm very ready for this episode. It should be a fun one. I think it's an odd topic, and it's one of our... We don't usually get into like super subjective topics, but this one's got hints of that. But I'm pretty interested to see how people feel. And this is an episode in particular that I would love to hear from people who listen on what you would count, or you know, who you would say would count in our criteria here, or you know, seasons you remember, players you remember, anything like that. Because it's a very subjective one, but it's going to be a lot of fun, I think.
Yeah, and we're talking about players who had unexpectedly great playoff series, whether they were just like completely out of nowhere, whether they were role players playing like all-stars, whether they were all-stars playing like superstars, just guys who just leaped off the page and were just like incredible. So
yeah. And we didn't look at the on the opposite side. I did not look at like guys who were really good who had bad playoff, like that doesn't interest me all that well. It doesn't, you know, not that big of a deal. Yeah. You know, oh, this guy choked in the playoffs. Like, I'm more interested in, like you said, the guy who came out of nowhere and scored 20 points in every, you know, game in the playoffs or whatever. One of the themes you're going to see with a lot of these and I absolutely understand is that they're like 3-game series or 4-game series or whatever. And we see these guys who, you know, they have a run, but I think that's still pretty significant, especially when you look at, you know, what the regular season numbers are compared to what their playoff numbers are. Yeah, you know, 3 or 4 games of averaging 20 points, you know, whatever. But when these guys, when they're nothings all year and then they average 4 straight 20, I mean, that's significant. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So we'll start here in 1966, 1967, Archie Clark, a Los Angeles Laker. A little bit of research here, a little bit. What I'll do is kind of break down the regular season numbers. And then, you know, after that, we'll do the playoff numbers. But regular season, 10.5 points per game, 2.9 rebounds per game, 23 minutes, 0.075 win shares per 48, and then a 12.3 PER. This is a little bit of an interesting one because he, before February, he had only averaged, you know, 7.9 points per game. But after February, it was 15.2 points per game. So he was a rookie. So this is a little bit of a different one where, you know, you have a rookie in here and, you know, he probably just needed to get trusted a little bit more, needed a little bit more playing time. But you see a pretty big transformation come playoff time. I mean, he was really, really good come playoff time. 25.7 points per game. So compare that to, you know, 10.5, 4.3 rebounds per game, 41 minutes. So we went all the way to 41 minutes from 23 the rest of the year. 0.172 win shares per 48, which is pretty solid, and then 18.8 PER. So it tells you that. Game log here, real quick. You know, the Lakers faced the San Francisco Warriors in the first round. They unfortunately lost in 3 games, but he had 26, 24, and 27 points. So not bad at all. And Archie Clark ended up actually being a pretty good player. He was a 2-time NBA All-Star and was one of the first effective, and this is according to a few articles I read, one of the first effective practitioners of the crossover dribble, which inspired his nickname, Shake and Bake. So Shake and Bake Archie Clark.
Yeah, he also was... he was involved in the trade that for Will Chamberlain to the Lakers.
Oh, yeah, I did. Oh, okay. All right. I did not know that, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
He apparently...
What are your favorite Archie Clark memories?
He apparently co-founded the National Basketball Retired Players Association with Oscar Robertson and the three Daves of the Busher, Bing, and Cowens.
There we go. Yeah. So Archie Clark, see?
Yeah.
A little thing, see? You know, you do a little bit of research here, and then you end up getting a pretty cool guy.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. That's an interesting one. And,
he's a little bit, I mean, this is the one where I kind of qualified as a rookie. I try to kind of stay away from rookies,
right?
Because that's like a, hey, you know, in the first 3 months, your coach probably hates you and doesn't trust you and you don't know any of the plays and you're terrible or whatever. But then you get going and going and going. Like this year, you're going to get something like, for the Bulls, Nikola Mirotic, as of late has just been awesome because now he's finally getting trusted. He's getting plays ran for him and stuff. So that, I always get kind of weary of that. But he really took a huge leap there from, like I said, 10.5 to 25. That's significant enough where I thought it needed to be included.
I think that's a good choice. Absolutely.
All right, so I'll move on here to 1977 Bob Gross from the Portland Trailblazers. And the Trailblazers will be a theme here coming up pretty soon. Regular season, 11.4 points per game, 4.8 rebounds per game, 27.2 minutes per game, 0.159 win shares per 48, and then a 16.2 PR. He had a pretty decent play. I mean, I'm not going to say he made a huge leap, but I'm going to kind of qualify where I really thought he stood out. Playoffs in general, 14.1 points per game, a 0.203 win shares per 48, and 18.7 PR. So improved a little bit there, but he was particularly awesome in the playoffs, and this was against the Philadelphia 76ers. 16 points, 10. Here's his game logs. 16 points, 10 points, 19 points, 10 points. And then in the final two games of the season, 25 and 24 points. And, of course, if you don't know that team, the 76-77 Portland Trailblazers are obviously the championship teams, the Bill Walton title team. So to have, game 6 and 7, 25 and 24 points and, en route to the NBA title, fairly significant. So that's kind of why I included him on this list, even if overall playoffs he wasn't, that much better than usual. But those the NBA finals, he really, really stood out.
Yeah. Yeah. Bob Gross was he played his entire career with the Blazers, except for his final season in 83 with the Clippers, where he was reunited with Bill Walton.
There you go. Oh, God, that Bill Walton. I believe he has a number retired, too, with Portland.
He did. Yes.
Is that correct?
And he went into the construction business after basketball.
I saw that on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
That's my favorite thing about athlete Wikipedia is because it's not obviously the modern athletes that do that, but it's all those all the 70s and 80s guys. Then he ran a home remodeling business for 20 years and still does. And I always look it up too. And it's always, I'm always like, oh, there he is. Yeah. Or they're real estate guys. And it's oh, yeah, okay. That's him. But nowadays, I don't think, I don't know if these guys are going to, I don't know if Kevin Durant has a budgeting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I imagine some of them will own businesses and will
Oh, sure. They get new investing and all that stuff. Yeah. But the day to day, I want to sit at a desk and work at an insurance
that
company.
Seems less likely,
those days are long.
Well,
Kevin Durant might own an insurance company, but he's probably not going to work the front desk at one.
John Havlicek worked in insurance while he was a player.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah. In the offseason.
Yeah.
Oh, good. I can finally make some money this offseason.
Exactly. That's insane. But yeah, it's amazing the just completely different lives those guys lived,
Breaking news here.
Well,
players today make more than they do, but it's still pretty fun. It's fun to look at. Yeah.
The extreme amount of it, I guess, in the lifestyle. I mean, yes, obviously, they make a lot more money now, but you still think of athletes were still making good livings for the most part in that time. I mean, I guess basketball was still behind baseball and football and what the guys were making probably up until the 80s. But anyway.
All right, so now the star of this episode, Billy Ray Bates.
Yes.
We're going to start with, here's our guy, 79-80. This is the first year with Portland Trailblazers. A little bit of background on Bates. The Houston Rockets selected him in the third round of the 1978 draft. And that's one of my favorite things about the old NBA, and I wish they still did, is where they had obnoxiously long amount of rounds. Only the first two rounds ever netted any decent players. But still, yeah. I like the idea of a little diamond in the rough, especially with the D-League. Come on, we can do more than two rounds, right? And then you get weird picks, Carl Lewis.
I do think the weird picks are fun. I would never watch it because it would be incredible.
No, it'd be horrendous. It would be who's this guy from Northeastern University?
It is pretty amazing that they used to go seven rounds deep or whatever.
Yeah. I just want celebrity. I want more celebrities being drafted.
There you go.
That's all I want.
Okay, so, that's fair. I mean,
and athletes from other sports that they hope, hey, you got to play NBA? No, not really. Oh, okay.
Maybe would draft Bjork.
And this is the opportunity for Bjork. Yeah, still.
Yeah.
How tall? She's kind of short, though, right?
Probably, but maybe she's got a good crossover. Who knows?
That's true. We don't know about her. She learned from Archie Shaken-Bake Clark.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
Got a full circle here. So
Peter Gudmundsson, most likely. Yeah, being Iceland's greatest player.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Of course. Yeah. Yes. Which I could not find. I'll look later, but we'll see. Billy Ray had a very interesting career. Before the season started, the first year where he was drafted by the Rockets, he was cut after his agent demanded guaranteed money for the third rounder, and they told him, "Oh, okay. Well, here's a door. You can walk through there." third round guy. He ended up then playing for the Maine Lumberjacks, the now defunct Continental Basketball Association, and then he won the league's Rookie of the Year and the Slam Dunk Competition, and he was a big fan favorite for his ferocious dunks. This led to a 10-day contract with the Portland Trailblazers in 1980, and then the High Flyer took the city by storm. It had almost kind of a Lynn Sanity-type deal where came a crowd favorite for his dunks. He had a very energetic playing style. And then, yeah, he didn't really come out of nowhere. I mean, he in a way he did because it took a lot of time for him to really get going. But he won NBA Player of the Week towards the end of his rookie season. And then the playoffs were a whole different story. Real quick, regular season, this is only in 16 games, mind you, but 11.3 points per game, 0.188 win shares per 48, and then a 24.1 PR. So while he might have not have had like the raw counting stats, like it showed that he was pretty good in those limited times. Like he just needed more time to really show and get out there and do something. In the playoffs, he absolutely did. The minutes per game jumped all the way up to 34.7. He averaged 25 points per game, 3.3 rebounds per game. Quick little game logs here. This is against Seattle, the Seattle Supersonics. He had 29 points, 20 points, and then 26 points in the final game. Obviously, Portland lost. But that's not the last we hear of Mr. Billy Ray Bates, because then the exact next year, he regular season, 13.8 points per game, 20.3 minutes per game. So apparently he started sucking again, and they said, oh, you're terrible. And then come playoff time, oh, wait, we'll start playing you again because he got really good again. 28.3 points per game, so that's a 13 to 28 jump. That's pretty pretty great. 38.3 minutes per game, PR 24.3, and then a 0.194 win shares per 48. His game logs, and this is against the Kansas City Kings, 25 points, 26 points, and 34 points. So, interestingly enough, a few tidbits on him, and I'm glad he came up. His average of 26.7 points per game in the playoffs stands as the highest in NBA history by a non-starter. So he didn't start any of these games where he was putting down like 30. So that's Billy Ray Bates, everybody. Unfortunately, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say he's talked about in the David Halberstam book on the Blazers. You know, he's kind of the I mean, most of the book is frankly depressing for the Trailblazers because of, it basically documents Bill Walton, his foot issues and not wanting to be on the team anymore. And, you know, the malaise that kind of set in after that. And then Billy Ray Bates was kind of like the ray of hope in a sense, where like, oh, you know, they just got out of nowhere and he's exciting for them. But obviously it was, it didn't really last. It didn't go well.
No, unfortunately not. No, so drug issues plagued him, you know, obviously the time period, and this is a common story with a lot of the late 70s, 80s players that, yeah, drug issues plagued him, and he ended up going to the Philippine Basketball Association. So he's, and almost, I mean, really in a lot of ways became like what we consider the modern, like Steph Marber, where, you know, you get statues built for you and there's like documentaries made about him or whatever. Billy Ray Bates was a legend in the Philippine basketball. In his four seasons in the league, he averaged 46.2 points per game.
It's not bad.
That's not bad at all. Yeah. Great little tidbit here. One player, Joel Banal, said his favorite game ever was holding Bates to a career low. This is his career low in the Philippine Basketball Association, 28 points. So that was considered the we shut down Billy Ray Bates because he only scored 28 points.
There are some Billy Ray Bates highlight packages on YouTube, including some Philippines highlights. So those would be interesting to see. I watched some of the Blazers ones. I didn't actually get a chance to watch any of the Philippines ones. So we'll have to... you know, on our future, of course, Philippine Basketball Association show that we'll be doing that.
It sounds great. It sounds awesome.
That'll be on there. So
a few fun things, too. Real quick, his points per game in the different leagues. And I'm not going to even try to pronounce the names of the teams that he played for. 1983, he averaged 41.7 points per game. 1986, 49.6. 1987 had a pretty good year. He averaged 54.9 points per game and 15 rebounds. And then 1988, 31 points per game. So, he enjoyed playing the Philippines. And apparently there's some other stories, too, that he, similar to Wilt Chamberlain, he scored a lot on the court and also a lot off the court as well, apparently, according to teammates. And there was some book that they said that he was quite enjoyed his time in the Philippines. So, yeah, unfortunately, things did not go too well for old Billy. January in 1998, he robbed a New Jersey Texaco at knife point, slashing the ear of the attendant, and he went to jail because that is not allowed. Robbing and then slicing a guy's ear is frowned upon in America.
I would imagine.
Yes, so he unfortunately... not too great post-career, but kind of fun. That was really interesting how back-to-back years. It's just funny, too, how like after that one playoff series, you would think that next year he'd be like a star, and he wasn't. It was kind of the same thing, and he needed to kind of prove himself again.
I mean, he played pretty well during that regular season, but I mean, it was more like a role player. I mean, he wasn't
exactly.
Yeah, I mean,
right.
he was playing 20 minutes a game. I mean, he had good numbers, but definitely was not. Yeah, it was more like he was just a good bench player, a good six
right.
man.
And then come playoff time, he's just the guy.
Right.
I mean, he's exactly. like the featured scorer
yeah.
off the bench too, which is just crazy. Which is really fun. Move on to 1982-80, Johnny Moore, San Antonio Spurs. Regular season 12.2 points per game, 9.8 assists per game. That was always Johnny Moore's game. The assist, 0.123 win shares per 48, and then a 17.5 PR. Come playoff time, you bump those up to 22.5 points per game, 14.6 assists per game. That was awesome. 2.5 steals, I wanted to add that. Also a really awesome 52.9 three-point percentage, which, you know, 82-83, that's good. That's, you don't get too many of those percentages. I mean, he obviously led the league at that time. 0.256 win shares per 48, and then a 25.6 PR. Just insane assist numbers as well. He had a 20 assists game against Denver, and then against the Los Angeles Lakers in the semifinals, he had an 18 assist game and then 2 17 assist games. So just crazy, crazy assist numbers for Johnny Moore right here. And it was kind of funny. I did a quick little play index, and only Magic Johnson in 1986 and 85 had more assists per playoff season, like in terms of the full playoffs, than Johnny Moore did in that year. So those are the only two guys, or the only person is Magic Johnson to have anywhere near the same amount of assists per game during the playoffs than Johnny Moore. So, and then right below him were John Stockton. So it's pretty good company to keep as far as point guards. So
absolutely. Yeah. He, actually had, like a really severe bout of meningitis mm-hmm. and that basically, ruined his career. He had it like in 86 and then played like 5 games in 87 and then was out for a while. I guess he played in Mexico and then he came back to the Spurs for part of the 89-90 season, but just completely took him out. He played one game with the Nets and the rest of his career with the Spurs, which is kind of interesting. But but he's another guy who probably like just one of those like early 80s point guards who's a little bit forgotten because, you know, I guess pretty much Magic and to a degree, Isaiah Thomas pretty much overshadowed everybody else.
Absolutely, yeah. And moving on here, 1998-99, Marcus Camby. This is New York Knicks Marcus Camby. Regular season, 7.2 points per game, 5.5 rebounds per game. Those are probably the only big significant ones for Camby. Come playoff time, they'll stepped up pretty big, 10.4 points per game, 7.7 rebounds per game, 24.8 PR. Especially in the Eastern Finals, he was quite dominant. And this is, of course, the New York Knicks that made it to the NBA Finals before losing to San Antonio. But he was dominant in the Eastern Finals against Indiana, 14.3 points per game and then 10.7 rebounds per game. Unfortunately, he struggled in the NBA Finals when they finally got there, 9.6 points per game and 7.8 rebounds per game. But I imagine, you know, big man Marcus Camby probably has some issues, you know, prime David Robinson and you know, becoming superstar Tim Duncan. So, that might have been a tough little matchup for young Marcus, but...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, people thought Camby was going to really end up being like a superstar type player, I think.
Yeah, and mind you, this is, you know, he had already been at Toronto and then was traded, you know, obviously went on to the New York Knicks. So he's already on his second
team. This was like
right
his
now,
fourth
yeah.
year, maybe? You know, I mean, it was
third or fourth, somewhere there, one of those two.
And he had during the playoffs, he had a, 0.280, win shares per 48, so which is really good.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he really did perform well, you know, I guess up until those finals, but. He obviously had another guy with a good career, but it never really quite met the expectations that kind of people,
and became a serviceable role player and that sort of stuff.
I mean,
and had some pretty good years, but
he was never really the
dominant big man.
He was
never
star, yeah.
No, he never really was able to gain the weight in a lot of ways. He never seemed like he was that – but became a really good defender and really good – obviously had a real good career. But, as you said, like the idea that you were going to throw it down to him and he was going to score 20 points per game or whatever never really kind of clicked and never really happened.
Yeah.
But found his niche able to keep it around for a while.
Nothing to be ashamed of, obviously. But, no. Is it the kind of the one time where I don't even know if he quite fulfilled that promise in that playoffs or for most of that playoffs, but it was kind of like a time where you could think like, oh, okay, this is what he's going
to
be.
Right. And then, the next year he comes back and he's back to kind of what he was the year prior, in the regular season. I was like, oh man, all right.
Yeah.
And then, he'd be eventually, moved for, I believe, Antonio McDice, right? To the Nuggets.
Yes, I believe that's right.
Yeah, and that's when I think he really started to kind of click a lot of ways. I mean, he was okay on the Knicks, but I think on that little Nuggets run of Camby was when he really kind of finally started getting it together. And then, you know, obviously moved on to Houston and a few other Clippers, you know, for a while.
He bounced around a lot. But, yeah, I mean, you know, I know he had a real good reputation as a defender. I don't know if that actually necessarily matched what, you know, I think he may have been a guy who's a little bit overrated by blocks. But but still, yeah, he was good. Marcus Camby.
All right. Speaking of the New York Knicks,
big snacks.
2004, 2007, Jerome James. Yes, you probably know this one. He was a supersonic at this time, regular season. Jerome James, 4.9 points per game, 10 PR, which is not good, in case you're curious. Come playoff time, though, Jerome James is a man. 12.5 points per game, 6.8 rebounds per game, 19.3 PR. So, you know what? Not great, but you could kind of make an assumption.
In 27 maybe. Minutes per game.
Right. So, I mean, he popped it up a little bit. So that was and you know, totally destroyed the Kings in the first round. Not as good in round two versus the Spurs, but did have a 7-for-7, 15-point game. And that series, the Seattle Supersonics took the Spurs to six games. Fun little mid-2000s Seattle Supersonics, a long-forgotten team in the annals of time.
Yeah. They had one really good year with Nate McMillan, and then it kind of fell off. But their defense got really, really bad. But
yes. And as you probably know, if you follow the NBA, Jerome James then got paid a lot by Mr. Isaiah Thomas. He got a 5-year, $30 million free agent contract with the New York Knicks. That went swimmingly. He arrived at his first spring training. I'm watching spring training in the background, so that's why I said spring training. He arrived at his first training camp out of shape, and in his first season, averaged only 3.1 points per game and 2.1 rebounds per game in 9 minutes. So terrible. And then ended up going to the Bulls and being totally fat as hell. And like, he's got the greatest. Have you ever seen the Jerome James as a Chicago Bull like media day photo?
I don't know if I have.
Let me. I'm gonna send it to you in the Skype right now. Okay. It's the funny. It's like the most horribly out of shape.
You have to put the show notes or something. If
it's
possible.
Like, dude, come on. Like, you can't even. Yes.
I will say one. You know, he had the great nickname of Big Snacks, of course, which is which is one of the better nicknames.
That's not like there's some guys who are like big, like Shaq. Everyone's like, oh yeah, you know he's fat, or Charles Barkley. This guy is
very
just completely
wide. Very wide.
Like yeah, it's not even like there's no muscle mass. There's not even an ounce of muscle mass. That's just straight up. Yeah. I am fat as hell.
It's funny because like 5 years, 30 million, like it's you look at it now and it's like, well, it's not actually that terrible. But I mean, for a guy who does nothing and, you know, and the cap being like 55 million at the time. Or whatever, right. Yeah, it was
like being hamstrung by Jerome James.
Right. It might have like been the fifth worst move that Isaiah Thomas made, but it definitely wasn't the worst. So
what's funny is there's always that lineage of the Knicks. Just like there was one year where and I didn't really look them up, but like they got Othella Harrington, and then who was the other guy? They got some other guy, and it was like they gave like decent contracts to these guys. Like, what are you doing? Why are you getting these guys? Who was Othella Harrington, and who was the other one?
They had Malik Rose, but I think they traded for him.
It wasn't Malik Rose. I'm gonna look it up right now. I got to find out who it was. But yeah, like they had like one good playoff series, and old Isaiah just had to have them. Or I don't know if Isaiah was their guy at that point.
But, he came on in 2004, I think. So.
Okay, so this is pre-Isaiah. So okay. Who the hell am I thinking of? I'm going to find out. As long as it's going to take.
Well, it's not our next guy, is it?
No, it is not Timmy Thomas. No. That would be later. Yeah, yes, but not.
Okay.
Not Larry Robinson. I don't know.
All right.
No, I'm going to move on. Right. I can't
that's
figure
fair.
It out.
That's fair.
I don't know who Larry Robinson is. So
I don't know. I know Eddie Robinson, but I don't know Larry Robinson.
Yeah, it wasn't Clarence Weatherspoon either, but it could have been.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, Jerome James, fat and bad, and then it didn't work out too well. No. But one good playoff series.
Yeah.
2005, 2006,
He was
Tim
really
Thomas.
Good in that playoff series. I like.
He was not. I mean, he was real. I mean, that was a guy was really who good. I think.
Yes.
Somebody told him, hey, by the way, you're you're a free agent. So, like, and he was like, oh, shit. Like, because that was like a mode, like, that. It, when you talk about it, and that's one that I'm glad we kind of talked about, because when you think of, at least when I think of this, I think of like a Jerome James, a guy who just got paid simply by having one, you know, a really, really good playoff run. Yeah. So
my guess is the Kings did not have a good defense that year.
No. Oh, God. Yeah.
And so it didn't have a good big man defense anyway.
Well, I'm sure Isaiah was pouring over his synergy and his offensive rating, his per 100 possessions.
Sure.
Numbers, yeah. So and not just going blindly by hit points per game and rebounds per game, but yeah.
Well, they had Brad Miller and they had Kenny Thomas, Brian Skinner, Greg Ostertag, and Darius Sengalia. So
what a powerhouse!
Yes, that was the year of the Chris Webber trade. So
yeah.
God. All right. As I mentioned, 2006, Tim Thomas is the Phoenix Sun, Tim's Thomas, in case you've probably seen videos of it. It's great. I mean, that's a guy just on a different world, Tim Thomas, who was loving it, too. Like, you remember that, you know, he was hitting threes and pounding his headband and just loving it, just having a great time. Regular season, only in 26 games, 24 minutes per game, 11 points per game. Come playoff time, they'll increase that a bunch. 28 minutes per game, 15.1 points per game, and surprisingly enough, 6.3 rebounds per game for old Tim Thomas. You know, famously hit a game winner against the Los Angeles Lakers. It just had a, like, I mean, just a ridiculous, and I'm sure there's a highlight video out there, but yeah, I mean, this is a guy who was just unconscious. Like, any three he put up was going in, and like, he was just having the time of his life with that team, and that was an exciting team, and it was just fun to see what he was able to do. And this is kind of funny as well, because that team was pretty solid and was thought of as being, you know, a really good team, but they almost lost to the Lakers in the first round, and it was Tim Thomas, you know, hitting that game winner and then having a really good, I believe in the overtime as well.
Yeah, it was a game tying three pointer. Game six. Like, Phoenix been down 3-1 in that series, and that,
yeah, they came back. Yeah, I mean, and Phoenix is favored in the series,
yeah,
by the
yeah
way.
But yeah, they were a second seed, the Lakers were the seventh seed and not particularly good. And yeah, the Suns, then he had another one in overtime. They won a game seven, and they destroyed them in game seven to complete the comeback. So he played really well against the Clippers as well in that series.
Mm-hmm. And he got paid pretty good.
He did. Yeah.
Who gave him? Oh, was it the Knicks?
The Clippers. It was the.
Okay, that was it. Yes. Right.
Yeah, I was thinking it was the Knicks who paid him. No, but it was the Clippers. So, another great organization. it's funny because he actually played about as well during the 2001 playoffs from Milwaukee, but that was in line with his season. Like, Tim Thomas actually was pretty good for a while, and like, it just sort of sank. Like, I remember people talking. I remember reading an article about you busts or whatever, and guys who, you know, and remember reading like that, you know, he was like one guy who, like, people were just like in awe of, like, his natural talent. And he was just a guy who never, like, was just never able to capitalize it beyond, you know, a few moments here and there with the work ethic or whatever it was. But, you know.
Now I remember this timeline here, because I remember why I was so much remember Tim Thomas during this playoff series, because he was on the Bulls prior to that, because
right.
He was trading the big Eddie Curry trade or whatever, and then they just waived him because they didn't want him and they thought he sucked or whatever,
yeah.
and you know, that he was a trouble and all that sort of stuff. And then I remember all my Bulls fan friends that were watching were like, oh, I told you Tim Thomas is good, and I was like, he's not good, like, he's just chucking threes and they just happen to be going in or whatever. And then of course I proved right in the end, but nice. Yeah, and they end up going to the Bulls again in a trade with Jerome James.
Yeah.
So there you go. And it was bought out yet again by the Bulls. So, like, stop taking him a trade.
Ray Allen was quoted as saying, if he wanted to, Tim Thomas could be the best player in the league. And apparently Tim Thomas called Kenyon Martin a Fugazi. So which is good. That's nice.
I love Tim Thomas. Yeah. He was a guy, and he was that way too. Even as a kid, you just knew this guy, whatever he wanted to. And I think he knew it, too. He was like, I could be good.
Yeah, but it's just easier not to be good.
I'd rather just kind of slow down.
Make, you know, good money and not really work
okay.
You know.
Like, we talk about an all-time bust. How much money did Tim Thomas make in his career? I mean, I'm going to look this up right now so you can feel bad about your life knowing how hard you work.
Yeah.
And
well, and in fairness, like, I'm sure, like, by like NBA standards, Tim Thomas probably didn't work very hard, but like by regular person standards, like,
oh yeah, yeah. Well, that's
like,
yeah,
insanely hard, you know.
So. Right, and I say that with people all the time as well, because they're like, oh, that guy's late. I'm like, yeah, he's probably. I mean, like, yeah, he's not like Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan level of dedication, but yeah, he's probably not. You know.
Yeah.
Let me see what he made. Oh my lord, he made $97 million in his life.
Not bad.
So. Yeah. Almost 97,800. So.
Hey,
good lord.
Good for him.
God, like, almost a billionaire. Like, that's unbelievable. Oh, God. That's great. I'm glad. Yeah. You know what? Hey. I don't even know what to do with my life.
Now that I found out you got the powerful reaction out of this.
That's a lot of money. Okay. Yeah. Well, hey, good for you, Tim Thomas. I always liked you. So,
yeah.
All right, final two ones on here that I have. 2007, Anton Jameson, Washington Wizards, Anton Jameson, which I forgot the Anton Jameson Washington Wizards era, but he was on there for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Regular season.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Andrew Johnson was like a really good player for a while. Like he was absolutely like a very good, like third best guy on your team. Like, you know, he was that for, you know, probably a decade. I mean, if you were trying to throw like a top 50 players of the 2000s together, like he'd be on there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Top 30.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt. And it's kind of funny here. We see this particular season kind of led to a future thing in his career that could have been, you know, significant had everything worked out. But regular season this year, 2007, 19.8 points per game. So obviously no slouch, 18.4 PER. But come playoff time, became an absolute monster. 32 points per game, 9.8 rebounds per game. 26.5 PR, so just became a, you know, unbelievable player. And the game logs too, and this is against the Cleveland Cavaliers, so this is the, you know, the early LeBron Cleveland Cavaliers. Not that early. He'd already been in the league a few years, but 28 points game one, so 28 points and 14 rebounds. Game two, 31 points and 10 rebounds. Game three, 38 points and 11 rebounds. And then game four, 31 and 4. And then, like I said, you know, kind of takes back is when Cleveland was looking for a guy, you know, another piece to fit with LeBron, you know, they went calling to Jameson, and Jameson was one of the guys they looked at. Interestingly enough, I should have copied this down. I have the quote or I had it. I was reading it this year. I looked up because I was trying to see SI Vault if they had anything here. And there was one thing about LeBron James actively recruiting Larry Hughes to come to the Cleveland Cavaliers and saying, "This is where you want to go, man. Like you and I together, we're just gonna do this thing." I mean, like, so I found that pretty funny because they were talking about Larry Hughes and Jameson, you know, obviously, and LeBron trying to recruit Larry Hughes, the free agent, to come to England.
So. No, I'm confused because, okay, this is 2006, 2007, but in that series, Larry Hughes was already on the Cavs. So are you talking about the year before?
Oh, that was the year prior. Sorry. That's what I meant. I was looking up. Yeah, I looked up. Okay. I'm just trying to see the context of the situation, gotcha. See kind of what people thought of Jameson at the time. Yeah, because
Arenas didn't play in this series. Was he hurt, I guess?
Oh, was he?
He must have been.
What was it? 2006, 2007.
And Caron Butler didn't play in it either. So
I guess somebody had a score. I guess that's why Jameson scored all.
I mean, he was efficient in that scoring too. But yeah, he definitely, you know, he did not. He did not have a lot of help in that series.
I'm trying to look it up right now.
I think I recall this.
Oh, you know, at the end of 2007. So towards the end of the season, towards MCL against the Bobcats.
That's right.
So.
Okay. And I guess
and Caron Butler, I don't know what he was, but yeah,
he must have been hurt too.
Oh, and this is okay. So this is famous. This led to the offseason where he opted out, and the Wizards gave him
all that money. Yeah,
ungodly amounts of money that I believe they're still paying. So
I believe the Magic are paying it, but yes.
Oh, that's right, right. Yeah. Okay.
I think it literally is like it ends this year or next year. So yeah.
Oh boy. All right. So yeah, there's the context of that. But yeah, no, the article was basically just like that. LeBron really wanted to play with Larry Hughes, which I found kind of funny.
Not
that Larry Hughes is a bad player.
No, and he was good, but they were a really terrible compliment for each other. Like, because Larry Hughes couldn't shoot.
Yeah, it didn't
and
work.
And LeBron couldn't shoot at that point either. So that was, you know, I mean, in theory, Hughes was going to like be the kind of like the wing defender and sort of be the Pippen in, you know, kind of in some respect.
I'm looking up right now. It was 2 years prior that this was. But I basically just looked up Jameson Cleveland Cavaliers just to get an idea of you know, just in general what they thought of him, because, you know, obviously he would be one of the big pieces that they would, you know, in the final years of LeBron in Cleveland, they would try to bring Jameson in to kind of make a playoff push not a playoff push, but like an NBA Finals push, and, you know, it just didn't quite work out. But
Jameson was traded to the Cavs in 2010. That was LeBron's last year there.
Was it last year? What was the Shaq? Was the Shaq year? Was this the same as the Shaq year? Or was that the year prior? I mixed those up. The year that they decided.
That was also the Shaq year. They added Anthony.
Okay, so that was just all hands on deck. Yeah. Oh my God, we better figure out something.
Yeah, and there have been talk of. It's always been rumored, but I think Steve Kerr has denied it. Apparently, J.J. Hickson for Amari Stoudemire was on the table, but the Cavs said no because they didn't want to get rid of J.J. Hickson. That has been like rumored. I kind of find that not to be kind of unbelievable, but they ended up trading. They ended up making the Antoine Jameson trade instead, and Jameson just wasn't really a great fit for that team.
It didn't work out either.
I mean, they were, you know, they won 61 games. I mean, it's not like they were terrible, but
that would have been like, that's if you had put them two together maybe for a whole year and kind of figured out each other's roles and all that sort of, but yeah, it didn't quite. And that was a long line of like, here, LeBron, here's another guy that's like, without any idea of if they're going to compliment him, if they're going to, it was just, here's a guy that's good. Like,
yeah, I mean,
there you go.
They had a lot of old guys and they just didn't, you know, like they just didn't really have like the right pieces, so to speak.
Yeah. Didn't quite work out. And then the last one I have here, and of course, as I mentioned at the top, if you have any that you have in mind or people that you remember or, you know, seasons you remember, guys you remember, whatever, please let us know on Twitter, you know, at Over and Back NBA. We'd love to kind of hear about it and talk about it and discuss it because I think it's a pretty fun topic if there's any. And it's kind of funny. Some that you think they didn't really do as well as you thought. Like you mentioned J.J. Barea in 2010-2011, who I thought as well because that guy was, you know, all over the place for those title teams, but nothing really showed up in the box. So it was hard to quantify what he did, but I remember him having a big impact in those playoffs, but it was hard to kind of quantify there, but that's the fun of it. So last one I came up with, and this one's a little bit similar to our first one. This is a guy who I think was just sort of still a young player that finally was getting trust a little bit more, but it's the 2013 Kawhi Leonard, San Antonio Spurs. You know, regular season 11.9 points per game, 16.4 PR, 1.66 win shares per 48. So not bad at all. But come playoff time, got a little bit better, 13.5 points per game, 18.9 PR, and then a 0.194 win shares per 48. But in particular, in the NBA Finals against the Miami Heat is when he really stood out. I mean, he was a guy who, as a defender, was kind of becoming a new man and really would turn into the Kawhi Leonard that we know today. But averaged 14.6 points per game and 11.1 rebounds per game, you know, on the biggest stage or whatever. And a lot of times was guarding LeBron or was at least guarding, you know, in some respects, either guarding LeBron or guarding, you know, Dwayne Wade. So always having the toughest matchup there and really became what we know of Kawhi Leonard today, where Pop really believes in him as you can make the justification. I mean, you could really honestly make the argument that he's their, I would say, you know, this year especially, their most valuable player, or at least, you know, right up there with, you know, maybe a Tony Parker. So,
yeah, I mean, I think it's either there or very close to there at this point. Yeah. I mean, just the way I think defensively in particular, he's just amazing. And
that whole identity. Yeah. The defensive identity is all him. I mean, that I don't know if that ship still is going if he's not there.
Right. Really obviously taking a bigger role in the offense too. And, you know, he was hurt a lot of this year. So it's kind of taken up until recently, last 20 games or so, for him to really get on track. But it's really, you know, they seem very scary now, you know, going into the playoffs and, you know, seem like San Antonio again. So that'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. But either way, he's a gift to them. So, and, you know, they could be really good for a long time, even after, you know, they move on from, you know, Duncan and Ginobili and eventually Parker. So, which is scary to think. I mean, they've had 18 years of 50 win seasons.
So fair.
In a row. Plus, I mean, and that's not even including the 99 season where there were 50 games. But so you could, you know, you're at close to 20 or whatever, whatever it is. It's so many and it's incredible. And I don't know if we quite like, have like a equivalent to the longevity of that brilliance is pretty amazing, like in almost in any sport, particularly in basketball, where it's really hard to do that.
Yeah, it's gonna take, it's really honestly, because I feel like even still, I don't know if we quite appreciate it as much as we should. It's almost going to take them all retiring and it being over and somebody writing like the definitive book or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, sure. I don't know, what maybe it's not a book. I mean, obviously, you know, it could just be, you know, anything, but I think it's going to take a while for us to really, and of course it might not be over, like you said, it, you know, Pop and right. Leonard might be for another 15
or
years.
I mean, and another guy, if they somehow get back-to-back titles, if they win this year and get back-to-back titles, I mean, that'll change, you know, what they're thought of, you know.
Sure. Which I always find really stupid.
Well, I mean,
they don't win back. No, but I know what you mean.
I mean, I get it. I get, you know, like they've won 5 in 15 years or whatever. That's pretty amazing. But yes,
I've gotten into arguments with people that say, oh, they're not a dynasty because they never had back to back. And I was like, you are.
Yeah, I think that's
like, out of your mind. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I think that's
like,
overly semantical.
like you're just unbelievable.
Like I would say what they have done is more impressive than the Lakers winning 3 in a row.
Exactly. It's longevity. I mean, and doing it with completely, I mean, like, and everybody, of course they have. But really, I mean, people sort of say, oh, they've always had the same, you know, a few guys. Well, yeah, I mean, they've had Tim Duncan, but the beginning, you know, the David Robinson years or whatever. And then that last David Robinson year, I mean, the Parker and Ginobili weren't what they were. I mean, that was that was not the same team. I mean, they really are not the same teams. I mean, yeah, there's the same, you know, two or three guys or whatever.
And they play completely differently.
Exactly, right.
And
yeah,
the game has completely changed. And yet they've managed to, you know.
Well, because that's how I can out these people, is they don't know what the hell they're talking about. Because they're like, oh, they're boring. And I'm like, they're not. I mean, okay, yes, that 2003 title team, yeah, I agree. They were boring. This team is not. Like, they play fast as hell. Like, And the best thing ever, I don't know if you've how much you look at kind of the tracking, the motion tracking stuff, is to watch what Tim Duncan and how he conserves his energy these days, where he basically doesn't go up like past half court.
Yeah, it's like Kareem.
Like Bill Russell, he's just like, yep, there you go, there's the ball. Just do what you guys are gonna do. I'll be over here. Okay, good, you scored. All right,
yeah.
I'm here. Like if I need to come back, I will. But otherwise, I don't really care to. You guys can kind of just do what you want to do over there. I'll just be over here. So I love it.
Indeed. Good list.
That's all I got. Yeah, that's all I got. So yeah, as mentioned, please, if anybody has, I would love to hear your other ones as well. So, and there was a bunch, you know, Jason Terry, with that Mavericks team I looked at was a pretty interesting one as well, but yeah, really good. Jason Kidd, that year when he became a really good, you know, 3-point shooter for the title Mavericks team. But yeah, I'd love to hear if you have any ones in your mind that you thought of. Definitely let us know, and maybe we'll make a blog post or something about it. So
yeah. I would that would be cool. We appreciate that. Of course, everyone can check us out at twitter.com/overandbacknba, also facebook.com/overandbacknba, and we have a website at overandbacknba.com that we promised to update someday. And but we
pinky swear,
yes. Of course, podcasts are at thepodiumgame.com. You can also check us out at the Hardwood Paroxysm Basketball Network of podcasts on iTunes. We would appreciate a rating and review, not just for us, but for all the great podcasts on the network, of which there are many and varied and are quite awesome. And did I forget anything, Rich?
I think that's it. I think you got it.
All right, cool. Well, thanks everyone for listening. Rich, it's been a pleasure. And we'll be back soon.